All right, I think we're about ready to get started. I'd just thank everyone for attending our monthly Blue Waters user teleconference or web conference. If everyone can see what I'm sharing, I hope it's... All right, so we're looking at the agenda slide for today. I should note for people who are not sharing the desktop that the slides for today's presentation are available on the Blue Waters portal under the training section. There's a webinar portion of the training page, and you'll find the link for today's PDF version of the slides there. All right, so we'll start off with recent changes to Blue Waters. We'll go over what's been changed in the last couple months, talk about recent user experience. Some people have been experiencing some performance issues that may be related to or may not be related to some of the changes. We'll go over usage, talk a bit about client success stories, and then a couple opportunities that MSF call for proposals, a couple Blue Waters items, and then we'll follow up with the extreme scaling workshop. So there's no topical presentation today. We alternate those every other month. So this is more just an informational call today. So if you have any questions, please feel free to call anytime or raise your hand. So let's go over the recent changes that have been taking place to Blue Waters. Back in January 21st, last month, we had a maintenance session where we did some upgrades of some software, Synexion, which is the third Lustre servers. We looked at updating or upgrading to a newer version of the Lustre client. We did substantial hardware maintenance that can't be done during our normal warm swap operations, which take place Monday and Thursday. There were changes, some upgrades to some of the SLEF software on the login nodes, and some NVIDIA security fixes to the GPU nodes. HPSS software was upgraded for the Nearline system, and there was firmware updates. Hello?
Is that what is SLEF?
That's the SUSE software, the enterprise software for Linux from SUSE. So that doesn't impact what's going on the compute nodes. Those upgrades were just for the ES login nodes, the H2O login nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some packages that were updated there. The NVIDIA security fixes were firmware and some library upgrades that were done to the XK nodes. So those could impact users if there was a problem there, but our initial testing didn't show any problems with those security fixes. And then probably the more a change that had a larger impact or possible impact would be updating the default programming environment versions for the different packages installed on the system. We were about 6 months from the last change for the default PE versions. Making that change didn't require users to necessarily recompile their code, except for users or make any changes, except for users who were using PGI with CUDA or OpenACC. There, with the dynamic linking, we went from an older version of PGI to a more current version that supported CUDA 5, and users would have to address changing either their environment or recompiling and linking to link in the current version of the compiler. And then more recently, on the 10th of February, we had some additional hardware maintenance. We also had some facility maintenance take place. We had the electricians come in and do some adjustments on some of the breakers. There was an NVIDIA graphics engine patch. There were some false positives for some issues that were going on, depending if it was a user issue or NVIDIA library issue. So that was applied. There was some testing of the H2O login software, the external services, that's what the ES stands for. So ESMS reliability. And then we also went and reconsidered the Lustre client that we had moved to. We decided to fall back to the version prior to 121 for possible stability reasons. And then upcoming, we'll briefly, I kind of jumped around here, so I'm going to just jump forward a little bit since we considered what happened during January and what happened during February. So initial reports after the upgrade on 121 went well. We didn't have anything come in during that first week except for one community code that was having trouble with the 4.8.2 GNU compiler. It was an issue that was actually causing problems with GPU code. So it wasn't necessarily the, it was something that wasn't appearing on CPU code, but it was a combination of the GNU compiler with the NVCC compiler from NVIDIA.
That was a known bug in the STL implementation of nth elements, and it just so happened that that function was only called for the GPU version, but it was entirely contained within GCC.
Okay.
And it's fixed in 4.8.3 whenever they release that.
Great. Thanks, Jim. I'll make a note. I think maybe in our summary of that bug, we don't have that quite summarized that way. So there were some no immediate performance issues during that first week. However, during the subsequent week, we started to get reports of degraded performance from a variety of users, so we realized it wasn't just one application that was causing some problems. We had a maintenance session already scheduled prior to that to do some follow-up work from the previous maintenance session. And we tried to characterize the state of the system as well as we could before going into maintenance. And we went into maintenance. During that PM session, there was a full system reboot. And once we came out of that and user code started running again, the users who reported degraded performance of their applications, that performance degradation disappeared. And so Cray and NCSA are looking into what possible sequence of events led up to that degraded performance, because many codes showed significant performance degradation during that period of time. Not all, but a significant number did. And so we're working with Cray to identify possible sequences of scenarios. No particular event seemed to indicate that or it would cause a significant performance degradation, but it looked like a sequence of events perhaps led to that performance degradation. Anyway, so we're hoping that whatever sequences that led to that situation are avoided once we can identify what the probable causes were. We don't have an upcoming maintenance session scheduled at the moment, so that'll be several weeks out before we have any possible maintenance session coming up. So there's no immediate changes, nothing that should cause any preservation of the system for that purpose. However, we are considering some changes to some aspects of the system at the moment. We've had some discussion about some of the settings for job scheduling policies. We've had some users and some staff make some observations that perhaps we're not implementing some of the parameters quite in the way we should, and we've been working with Adaptive and on identifying some possible for parameter changes that would hopefully improve the turnaround time for a class of jobs, medium to large size jobs, and also improve the turnaround time for a wider range of users. At times, it's possible for a single user to dominate the system without a single large job. Our lead admin, Jeremy Yunus, is here, and he's been developing these policy changes, and so he can give a quick summary. We haven't implemented them yet, but we have a process where we go through a change control review, and we're not yet at that point, but probably in the next week or so we'll be announcing these changes.
Yeah. We'll be sending an announcement with advance notice prior to implementation, but in a nutshell, we'll be reducing the growth and priority at job C's by spending time in the queue relative to other factors where job scale will still be the dominant factor in establishing priority. And then with the queue being just ahead of that, I guess. So the queue it's targeted at being high, normal, or low, and then job size, and then queue time will be after that in order of priority rank. Other changes we'll be making will be limiting the amount of jobs that can accrue priority, not just by job count, but also by requested amount of the system. So it's another restriction, but will not have most users do not see this unless you have several multiple iterations of the entire system submitted back to back, then it will cap and restrict growth of that priority, limiting given users from dominating the queue. We'll also be making another corrective adjustment to better balance user priority and queue stuffing within a given project so that there is not inter-project competition and that that's metered. And then lastly, we'll be looking at a fixed reservation for limited to jobs that are below a certain time threshold and size threshold for quick turnaround for high priority and debug jobs that are that fit within that scope. And initial stats that we're considering might just be, for example, a couple hundred nodes by 4 hours long during business hours only. And so we'll probably start that by reserving 500 nodes at first and then gradually reducing that based on how well it's utilized down to the level that it is utilized. So that should be about it.
Thanks, Jeremy. I think we also observed some other interesting cases where a single user who has a mixed workload of XE and XK jobs was able to kind of starve themselves out of one particular feature by having so many jobs in the other feature. So we're trying to work around that. Part of that is due to how we have our single or reduced number of queues implementation, and we're relying more on adaptive features to control the workflow. And we're hoping to minimize the growth in any kind of queue matrix. A lot of sites have a very complicated queue setup, and we're trying to avoid that, but also maintaining high quality of service and good turnaround time.
So what should the science team members expect to see after these are completed? What benefits or non-benefits should they expect to see?
So as it stands currently, depending on how the system is filled, a 24-hour job could block out even high priority or debug jobs for a certain amount of time, even when they do not request much time. By constraining a subset of the nodes, around 500 or so, you could expect to see faster turnaround time during business hours for high priority or debug jobs that are constrained within that scope, under 200 nodes or under 4 hours. So faster business hour turnaround time for those type of jobs are what we're aiming for, and if we will gauge how much the system is dedicated to that during that time based on utilization of that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so are there any questions from people on the call regarding upcoming changes? Hopefully they are transparent and benefit everybody, and we know we can't always satisfy everyone's request for getting their jobs through in the timely manner, but we will try to optimize that as best we can. So the next item on the list here, which seems like a simple one, which is the addition of project space links in Nearline. So we've had some confusion about how users are supposed to use the Nearline system. And part of that is kind of a continuation of how the mass storage system at NCSA was set up in the past, in that there was no concept of a project space. There was only the user space on the system. And we've had several groups not realize that they need to move their data into a specific space on the Nearline system that falls under their project space, and it mirrors the same way the Lustre file system is set up. And after some discussions with Michelle Butler and her team down in the Storage Enabling Technologies group, we have come across a fairly simple solution, which would be that there will be a link within Nearline. So when you log in, when you connect up through Globus Online, for example, you would see symbolic links going off to /project/site/team/ whatever your three-letter PSN is. And if you happen to have multiple projects that you're part of, you'll see each project listed separately. And that way it'll be more evident and more visible where you need to move your data. If you have data that you're not going to share, then that's fine. That can be in your home space on the Nearline system. And if you have data that's part of a group project effort, then that would go in the project space. And we're more likely or more willing to consider requests for increase in project space, since that's a mutually beneficial type increase in quota space for Nearline than we are typically for just a single user on the Nearline system. So that's hopefully going to avoid future confusion down the road with the, as new teams come on. We apologize for any confusion that it has led to currently. We hope we thought we had the documentation fairly clear on that, and that it was pretty self-evident where to put your data. But in some cases, that didn't happen. Another change that's coming down the road. We don't have a firm date on this yet, but we're implementing the use of a IO profiling library called Darshan, which is from Argonne National Lab on Blue Waters. Initially, we'll have it set up and installed as something that users can add optionally, and then at some point, once we're confident and comfortable with the data collection and the impact, we've done some impact studies and have found no large impact on application performance, then we'll make it default for all users. The goal of this is to provide Blue Waters with the ability to identify data access patterns for different applications and look for cases where users may not be implementing very efficient I/O, and then we can look for improvement in user I/O performance. For people who are used to computing at NERSC, NERSC has been enabled for a while as well, and we find it to be a very additional tool for part of the Blue Water system monitoring to help us identify potential improvement for users. And it wouldn't just help us, it also help users as well. So you can look at the reports and identify how much data you wrote, if that's not something you keep track of, and where and how it was written. So we think it's mutually beneficial. And we'll hopefully have an announcement in the next week or two about having that available for users to try and then making it default on the system as well. So if there are any questions about upcoming changes or changes that took place previously and the impact on the user experience, please let me know. If not, we'll continue on. All right, so we do our monthly update on system usage, and I started adding system utilization. Now that our data is available on the XDmod, part of the XDeed system, so we have a XDmod web server that can provide this information. So we are now about 80% into the year for starting April 4th for the start date for most allocations, or for all allocations. And the table up there just gives us an idea of where the different groups are with respect to usage. And you can see the NSF TREC team, the largest allocation body, is at just 49%, a little bit over that actually. And the two other smaller teams are on 35%, 22% as well. We've had some conversation with some TREC teams who have single-year allocations that have expiration dates that are going to be moving into more of the September timeframe. So this isn't necessarily going to take into that account right away. So that this kind of analysis of where we are with the burn rate and how far we need to be at certain periods of time gets a little more complicated. So we'll have to revise how this usage analysis is done. But at least the fact that we're now more than halfway keeping up with more than 50% of where the expected linear burn rate would be is an improvement over how we've been up until January. And a part of that has been that utilization has improved quite a bit over the last few months. So down in the lower left corner, the first plot there is the Blue Waters utilization. If you were to go to XDmod and the Blue Waters NCSA XDmod, you can see this information starting from September through February. So February is kind of incomplete data, so that only takes up into account the data to date, so the first 17 days, so that utilization number will hopefully slowly grow. You can see that we've seen good utilization growth, pretty steady. This is for XE and XK. At the moment, XDmod doesn't differentiate between our two feature types for X, the GPU and the CPU nodes. And then on the right-hand side, the lower right corner, is a blow-up of just the last few weeks, the last 8 weeks of utilization. over Christmas period and into February. And you can see that at times utilization approaches over 90%. And many of you have observed situations where your jobs aren't starting right away because we're at 99% utilization. So we have been hitting some high utilization periods over the last couple months, and we're quite happy about that, and we like to see that sustained utilization as well. And you can see the dips where it drops down dramatically are the days where we had preventative maintenance or some kind of outage that decreased utilization. So we look forward to seeing continued high utilization of the system. So request for science success information. And this is something that we've been asking for at every monthly call. We do have routine calls, regular calls with NSF, and they are always asking what's new on Blue Waters. And so we're always looking to have some nice story to tell, and we have these every week. So we're always looking for information from our partners and from our users about what's going on, what you're accomplishing. Even if it's not a publication that's coming out right away, if you got something that's coming out soon, or some discovery, or some insight that you can share with us and that we can share with NSF, that'd be much appreciated. We've been having some interesting discussions with some of the PRAC PIs during our annual PI PRAC call or phone call, and one of the things that we've been identifying is that a lot of teams are sharing data with other teams, other communities that we would like to know about. We find that a good way to measure the impact of Blue Waters is by how much the data that you're generating is being shared within members within your own group, within your own community, or the wider public. So if you have some information on that, we would greatly appreciate that being provided to us as well. Then we have talk about how you can send data to me, you can go to the Blue Waters portal, the share results section, or you can, NSF PREC teams can contact their point of contact as well. One thing we've noticed is that not all teams are including proper acknowledgement in some of their papers, and so we really want to emphasize that for tracking purposes and for proper acknowledgement, be sure to include the proper reference numbers. We use these sometimes to search when we're looking for papers that are related to actual work on Blue Waters. So be sure to include not only the ACI number for the Blue Waters project itself, but also your particular OCI number, your award number for your NSF PRAC, if that's how you're on the system. That'd be very helpful. When we find that information in a report or a publication, then we're very confident that that work was done on Blue Waters. So just a reminder for teams that have a one-year allocation that the NSF call for proposals for March is coming up soon. The deadline is March 10th. So Rudy Eigenman is the program officer for that part of the work now. So you can contact him for questions and concerns about the timelines for the next call. And then it'll be in November subsequent to this particular March RFP. One thing we'd like to highlight now is, and many of you have received an email with the announcement for the Blue Water Symposium that saved the date. So this will be the second annual, and it'll be focusing on petascale science and beyond. It'll be May 12th through the 15th here in Champaign-Urbana. And hopefully by May we won't have any ice or snow. And I don't know about the rest of the people in the Midwest, but we've got a fair amount of glazing and ice today. Not very nice. It'll be a good symposium. We'll have some keynote speakers. We're starting to get acknowledgement of keynotes that we've asked to come and give a presentation, and we'll have panels, posters, and breakout sessions as well, and hopefully within the next week we should have a website up and running and the agenda starting to be fleshed out and the hotel information available. So that should be sent out hopefully by this Friday. Blue Water Science teams are expected to have a senior representative as well attending in attendance. Another announcement is the formation of the Blue Waters Science and Engineering Team Advisory Committee, the CTAC. So we discussed that back in, I think, October, November, and now we're happy to announce that the advisory committee has been populated and we have about seven members representing the various PREC teams. And then we have the lead person for the Great Lakes Consortium for Petascale Computing being the component for the for that group. We have the same goes for the University of Illinois representative. So, and then one person from industry, Rick Arthur from GE. So if you're interested in possibly becoming a future member of the CTAC committee or the, being on the CTAC, it's going to be a two-year term. We'll be rotating and alternating every other year, starting year after year two. If you're interested, there's a link within this PDF, or if you go to the NCSA webpage, then there's information about the details for the Blue Waters CTAC. So we're happy to have these people on board, and we welcome their participation in the Blue Waters project. Another opportunity within the Blue Waters project are Blue Waters internships. So we just finished our Blue Waters fellowships announcement, and we received a pretty large number of applicants.
Over 100.
Yeah, over 100 applicants, so we're quite pleased with the interest in the Blue Waters Fellowships. And now we have Blue Waters Internships. So Blue Waters Internships are targeting undergraduate students, in this case, and not graduate students. And the goal here is to increase the awareness and engagement of or involvement of undergraduate students in high-performance computing. So this is a opportunity for a mentor, which we're looking for. We're looking for faculty that are interested in being mentors to mentor undergraduate students. There's a stipend of $5,000, the attendance of a high-performance computing workshop that will be led by Shodor, and travel to the Blue Water Symposium in 2015. So if you know of anyone that's interested in becoming a mentor, or you yourself are interested in becoming a mentor, we encourage you to follow the link here off the Blue Waters portal and sign up either undergraduate students or yourself as a mentor. So Scott Lathrop is our education outreach person for that particular effort, and he'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. And please feel free to ask any questions as we move along here. We're getting close to the end.
So yes. Like maybe a little bit more detail about the institute for the undergraduate since planning is underway. So it's going to be here at
Right.
And it involves a lot of U of I staff, so in the Blue Water staff. So it's a great opportunity for those students to learn a lot about Blue Waters, about high-performance computing in general.
Yeah, it'll be led by a couple people that we just met from Shodor. And they came here for 3 days to get up to speed on the Blue Water system and updating their examples and training material to be up to the scale of Blue Waters. So we're pretty confident that the two-week training session for these undergraduate students will be quite beneficial.
So what period is the internship supposed to take place over?
Let's see here. I didn't put that in this slide, so let me make sure I have the right dates. You know offhand, Christine, while I look it up?
Well, I think they go from summer to summer.
Right, but it starts in June?
I think they start in June with the institute, and then they go full year.
Okay. So it'll most likely start end of June or in June and continue for 1 year. And I have the web page up here, and I'm looking
because
at
the institute is also meant as an introduction and
yep.
A kickoff for the...
Yes. So that would be end of May. So the institute would be May 25th to June 7th for the undergraduates, and it would basically start there and go for 1 year.
So they're basically expected to work full-time over the summer and then what during the rest of the year?
That, I don't know. I would have to ask Scott what the guidelines are.
It depends on what the sponsor decides. So that work plan is... can be very different depending on what exactly the that particular mentor or sponsor is. So there's a lot of flexibility in the program. The expectation is that at the end of the year they produce like a technical report, let's call it something like that, or a poster.
Does that answer your questions, Jim?
I think so. I mean, we've done summer REU type programs that are typically 10 weeks. But, yeah, I'm just trying to, I mean, so the stipend is paid over the full year equally, or is that, how is that determined?
It can vary. It can be like a period like similar to an REU over the summer, but then there's an expectation that the student and the mentor will be in touch during the year, and there will be, it can be that they're at the same institution or they're at different institution, but sort of continue their work over that period, over the whole year.
Okay. I mean, do you have an example of a program that this is modeled on?
Well, we had over 40 interns in our previous years. We took a one-year break because of funding, and now we're restarting the program. And we can point you to the, I think we have this on the website, the previous students and what they've done.
Okay. Yeah,
and, of course, we can put you in touch with Scott. He knows this program in and out.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. We'll have Scott leave. All right. So our final opportunity or item for discussion is just to make sure that people are aware of the Exceed Blue Waters Extreme Scaling Workshop, which is going to take place August 14th and 15th in Boulder, Colorado. And the emphasis or topic for this particular workshop will be the intersection of big data and large-scale computing. So this is an opportunity for workloads that are not your standard HPC workload running on non-standard HPC architectures, or a data-intensive application running on an HP-style architecture, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives a fair amount of room for what kind of work you're doing, and we hope to have some engaging discussions. We're trying to get some good presenters, keynote speakers, and people to attend. It should be a good place for some good networking, some good discussions as well. I should note that it's also on the tail end of the Rocky Mountain Academic Computing Conference, which usually takes place in Boulder, so it's going to be a couple days before that. So if you're going to be in attendance for that, then you might want to stay around and attend the Blue Waters Extreme Scaling, or the Exceed Blue Waters Extreme Scaling Workshop. And that's all I have. I think we can wrap things up a little early today. We're always looking for more suggestions for topics or webinars. If you have any ideas of things that you want to see or hear or listen to during one of our monthly calls, send me an email. And we'll try to come up with some good content either from ourselves or from other vendors that provide that information. So if it's something you want to hear from NVIDIA, something you want to hear from Alinea, something you want to hear from Cray, just let us know, and we'll coordinate that activity. All right. Are there any other questions from people on the call? All right. I don't hear any. Thanks, everyone, for attending the call, and we'll have our next call in March, and hopefully we'll have identified by then a good topic for discussion. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.